One of the greatest of our Rishonim, the Ramban, when he talks about Avelos, he uses a pair of phrases, just two words, but they tell us a lot. They tell us a lot about how to use the next 3 weeks that begin today. The two terms are Avelos Chadasha and Avelos Yeshana. There's mourning, there's being sad in a new way, Avelos Chadasha, and in an old way, an old Avelos, Avelos Yeshana. What do those two words mean? The Ramban says that when a Jew, Rachman Litzlan, loses a relative, a close relative, and he's sitting Shiva and Shloshim, that's what we call Avelos Chadasha. It's new, it's fresh, the loss is fresh. He just lost a relative yesterday, last week, last month. The Avelos is natural. And when you have that sort of Avelos, so the most intense Avelos comes first. Immediately after the burial is 7 days of very intense Shiva, and then the rest of the next 30 days, somewhat less intense, and then often for the next number of months or next year, the lowest level, the Avelos starts intense and gradually builds away. The Avelos for the Beis HaMikdash, which we begin today, is the Ramban calls an Avelos Yeshana. It's an old Avelos. We're mourning for something that happened a long time ago, 2,000 years ago. It seems like forever. Ramban points out that Avelos Yeshana is organized the opposite way. Instead of starting from the most intense and then gradually easing off, we start gradually and build up. You have 3 weeks, and then you have the 9 days, then you have the week of Tisha B'Av, and then Tisha B'Av itself. We're climbing up the mountain instead of climbing down from the mountain. Why the difference? Why is Avelos for the Beis HaMikdash organized different than Avelos for a relative? What would you say? Why is it organized differently? Any thoughts? Yeah, what do you say? Right, that's right, it's a great point. It's closer to you. A Jew loses a relative, the Avelos, one hopes, is natural. The feelings flow on their own. And the halachas of Avelos allow us to sort of work our way through different stages of grieving. So that's why Ramban calls it a new, fresh Avelos. It's Avelos Chadasha. I feel the loss, and then the Avelos gradually eases into different stages. But as you said, Avelos Yishan, Avelos of the Beis HaMikdash, it's not going to come automatically. I need to tap into it. I need to develop it. I need to cultivate it. So where the halacha is going to give me structure to gradually build up and up and up to the point where, if we still have a Tisha B'Av this year, to the most intense Avelos. In other words, I need to and I can develop a feeling of missing the Beis HaMikdash. It doesn't come automatically, but something I can tap into, something I can train for. And that's what these next 3 weeks are for, are to train for that. It's why, sort of like if you've already had some phone experiences here in Beit Meir, you know, if you're on the phone and you're on a call and it gets dropped, so you just got to go to some other spot on campus. Everyone has their spot where they think in remote Shapir you can get the best reception. But if you're in a place with bad reception, so a lot of times the call just gets dropped, and well, it's what it is, because it's bad reception. These 3 weeks, we have good reception. We're in an area with good reception. We can begin to notice over these 3 weeks what's missing. We're tuned into HaKadosh Baruch Hu in a way that often would not be the case. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu dropped the call, we feel like he hung up on us, we're going to notice it. We're going to notice what's missing over the course of three weeks. So over the course of these 3 weeks, we can begin to develop over 3 weeks, over 9 days, a sense of what am I missing in my relation with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What is the Beis HaMikdash? The most basic question, like, what exactly are we missing? Karbanos? Kohanim walking around in Big Day Kahuna slaughtering animals? Some of us may already naturally miss that, but most of us are probably like, what am I missing? So over the next 20 minutes or so, I want to explore with you what was at the center of the Beis HaMikdash, why it mattered to us then, where it is now, and why it matters to us now. And hopefully this will begin to lay the groundwork for 3 weeks of beginning to appreciate more what a Beis HaMikdash could do for us, what it is that we're missing, and what it is that we're building towards. But before we jump into the center of the Beis HaMikdash, in and under, first I just want to start with a Gemara that I imagine almost all of us have heard in the past, but maybe never thought about. If you want, you can take a peek in front, inside. Some people are text people and some people are not. If you want to just listen, it's totally fine. If you want to look inside, I apologize that the packets were not stapled together. They're loose sheets. Here are the... The Gemara tells the following... gives the following sketch in Maseches Nitzan. The Gemara says... we all heard about the model slap in the baby. Here's what the Gemara actually says. The Gemara says that an embryo, a fetus, growing inside his mother's womb for 9 months. Over the course of those 9 months, he has the most amazing covers. I saw earlier, just before, some guys are learning with peers, some guys are learning with Machachin. We all once had the chance to learn with the Malach. And what do you learn with the Malach? Not just these Mayer Makomos, Kol HaTorah Kula. That's what Gemara says. You spend 9 months with the most amazing Rebbe, the most amazing Chavrusa. You learn with a Malach for 9 months, and what happens? So, you learn Kol Torah Kula. How come I wasn't born knowing Kol Torah Kula? What happened to me? On the way out, where did all that Torah go? Who knows? Right? The Malach slaps you. The Gemara does not say anything about this ridge under your nose. That is a bone mice. But the Gemara does say that on the way out, as the baby's about to be born, the mom slaps him across the face, and he forgets everything. Okay. How many, raise your hand if you ever heard that I got it. Okay. You all heard it before. I ask you a simple question. Can you imagine what it feels like to have the job of doing pointless things? Can you imagine what it feels like? Not that I'm often that feeling. But if you were a mother and you were told you're going to learn with every single baby until he's born, and then you're going to snatch away all the Torah you just taught, is that the most disappointing, frustrating thing in the world? And forget for a moment about the mother's feelings. He doesn't have feelings. What is the purpose of that? Why? Why teach a baby called Torah Kula only to ensure that he forgets it before, right at the moment he can actually put it to use? What does that Gemara mean? We all heard about as children, but now, as maturing almost adults, you begin to think about things critically. What is that? God, what's Gemara telling us? The baby was called Tarkula, but then it gets snatched away. What's the purpose? It seems so cruel. It seems like a tease. It seems pointless. Put that on the side for a moment. And now let's dive into the center of the Beis HaMikdash. Here the Rambam, on the second page, the page that looks like this, on the top, the Rambam says there is a mitzvah. He opens it, Rambam's had his four mitzvah, two of them are karbonos, save for avodah, save for karbonos. He begins, logically, at the beginning. Before we talk about karbonos, talk about where we bring them. He talks about building a Beis HaMikdash. And here he tells you, there's a mitzvah to build a Beis HaMikdash. Okay? We're going to build a couple of rooms. It was very fancy. A basic mitzvah, yeah, question. As I was saying before, this ridge has nothing to do with the mouth. That part is above it. The Gemara does say the mouth slaps. The Gemara does not say that. Someone trying to give up that. But we're going to come back to the depth of your question in a couple of minutes. The Rambam says here, there's a mitzvah book of Beis HaMikdash. And he says, usually it was very fancy, but the most basic Beis HaMikdash has a couple of walls, a couple of rooms, and a couple of key pieces of furniture. Take a look, if you'd like, and I'll paragraph off ahead. Alien and Tarmashin, Ikerulinia Bites. Allah above. Most of the Mikdash Kalim. You build the Beis HaMikdash. Here are the key pieces of furniture. And listen carefully what he says and what he doesn't. You have a Mizbeah. You have a ramp to go up to the Mizbeah. That's outdoors, together with the key or the crown will wash their hands. Then you walk indoors, three
of furniture. Menorah, Shulchan, and Mizbeach for Ketores. That's the key furniture in the Beis HaMikdash. Mizbeach outside with the ramp, the kir outside with its base, inside the Mizbeach for Ketores, Shulchan v'lachapanim, and the menorah. You notice anything missing? What did the Rambam not mention? The Aram, the most central thing of all, I would think. In the middle, where Gadol goes in, the holiest spot in Yom Kippur, there's an Aram. The Rambam left out the Aram. Do you not need an Aram in Beis HaMikdash? What's he saying? Strange. It's mystery number one. Lost Aram. It's lost just in terms of the language of the Rambam. Then there's the actual lost Aram. The actual lost Aram is, if you turn to the third page, the Mishnah says that Mishnah and Yuba is talking about the Avodah and the Parzal Yom Kippur, the one day a year the Parzal got to go into the Kodesh HaKadosh with the Ketores. The Mishnah describes that in the days of the first Beis HaMikdash, he would walk in there to the Kodesh HaKadosh once a year in Yom Kippur, and he sees the Aram with the Kruvim, he has his Ketores. Then the Mishnah says right on here, but that would give him the bottom of his name. The Shemitah Aram. Once the Aron was taken away in later years, so then the Kohen Gadol would walk in and just see a slab of stone. So the Gemara says, "Where did the Shemitah Aron? When it was taken away, taken where? Where did the Aron go?" It's true historically. In this entire second Beis HaMikdash, the Kohen Gadol never walked in and saw an Aron. The entire second Beis HaMikdash for over 400 years, he walked in Yom Kippur and just an empty slab of stone. The lost ark. The lost ark. This is where it comes. Where did it go? So the Gemara has a fascinating machlokas. Machlokas HaTanaim. Where is the ark? We know it's not where it used to be. On Noah walked in the second base of the condition of Noah on Kodesh. The Gemara is a machlokas. Did it go to the side or did it go down? Some Tanaim said it went to the side. Some Tanaim said, you know why it was there in the first base of the second base of the condition? What happened in between? Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian armies came, sacked Yerushalayim, and destroyed the first Beis HaMikdash. They walked off with all the treasures, including the Aron. So one opinion says, Aron Gadol Gadol. It was taken to Babel with at the time of the destruction of the first Beis HaMikdash, and it's there somewhere in a museum in Iraq. That's one opinion. The other opinion is no. The Aron was not taken by Nebuchadnezzar. It was already gone before he showed up. Where did it go? Not to the side, not east to Babel, but down. Exactly where? Underground. That's the other opinion that Gemara has. A historical machlokas. Where did the Aron go? Did one of the last kings of the Jewish people, Yoshio, put it in the basement, in a cellar? Keep it safe, Nebuchadnezzar shows up and the Aron is nowhere to be found, or was it taken by Nebuchadnezzar's army to Babel? A historical machlokas. Either it's here or it's there. Either it's down in the basement somewhere, we don't know where, or it's hidden somewhere in Iraq or Iran. I was talking to some before from Persia. It could be. Maybe it's not far from where you grew up. So that's a historical machlokas. Okay. The Tanam tried to figure it out. They weren't sure. They were looking at the Pesukim, trying to figure out where is the lost Ark. With that in mind, I want to show you a second Rambam about the Ark. And so far, turn once again. I'm sorry, the pages did not successfully get stapled. We'll turn back to the second page, the one that looks like this. We already looked at one Rambam. At the top of the page, Rambam in Perek Aleph. And the Rambam there, we saw a couple minutes ago, in talking about the mitzvah to make a mikdash, what did he say about the Aron? Nothing. Right? We saw that before. He didn't mention it. He mentioned one of the critical pieces of furniture in the Beis HaMikdash, did not mention the Aron at all. That was problem number one. Problem number two is now moved down to Perek Dalet. See in the middle of the page, Ram Hilfus Beis HaBechira, Perek Dalet. Here, instead of saying too little about the Aron, the Rambam now seems to say too much. we're now in the fourth parak, when he begins to discuss the Kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash, and as he begins describing the Kedusha and geography of the Beis HaMikdash, he starts with a stone. Very dramatic. Evan Isa Bekosh HaKadosh. There was a stone in the Kosh HaKadosh. And that's where the Aron had been placed. Shaleh Haya Aron Muna. He says there were other items around it. Also other items of historical significance to the Jewish people. Sinsanas Haman, the container of Mun. Hashem had told Moshe that they had put away one container of Mun. The Jews always remember that miracle. Lata Aharon, Aaron's staff with all the flowers on it. And remember that what the Rambam were reading. The Rambam is writing a halachic work. The Rambam, the same thing, you're just seeing one little snippet of it. But this is one little snippet of the Rambam's Mishnah Torah is his attempt to give you all of the halachas of Shabbos. Every single halach. Organized fantastically well. Halach. Okay. So he tells the book in the first day of Sabbath, you're supposed to have an aron on that slab of stone. Okay. So then he goes on to say, well, the Eishab on a Shlomo as Havayis. When Shlomo Melech built the Beis HaMikdash, the Yodash was so full of her, and he knew that it's not going to last forever. He knew that this Beis HaMikdash was not going to be it until Mashiach comes. It's going to be more. This one's going to be destroyed. Bana bo makam l'knoz bo ha'aron l'mat. He built in a contingency plan. He built in the escape hatch. He built the Beis HaMikdash, said, I have to plan for the future. Someday, some army is going to come and destroy the Beis HaMikdash. Let's plan in advance. He builds a special place in the cellar with matrimonios, amukos, valkakalos, some deep labyrinth underground, a very, very well-hidden spot, high security in the basement. The Yoshio HaMelech, a couple of centuries later, Shlomo's great friends in Yoshio, Tziva, Ukinozov, and Mahmoud Shabbat Shlomo. A couple of centuries later, Yoshio HaMelech realizes that things are going south. The Jews' political situation is going down. The Babylonians are in ascendancy. Yoshio realizes it's just a matter of time before we're destroyed, before the army comes and sack Yerushalayim. He says, okay, he tells us true, now is the time, but we still have safety. They have time to put the R in the basement. We'll activate Shlomo Melech. Okay? What's the Rambam telling me? Who's he possibly, right? Underground, right? Because the Machlokas HaTanaim, where is the Aron? Is it now underground? Is it now in Babel? It's the Rambam Paskin, it's underground. In the halachic work, listen to what you just told me. In the halachic work, the Rambam Paskin, that the halacha is that the Aron is underground. What's wrong with that?
There's no answer.
What do you mean? It's a machlokas. So whenever there's a machlokas, it's something asur and mutter, the Rambam will take a stand. Either he paskins the asur, paskins the mutter. I'll tell you what the halacha is. But here, what's the problem? It's not halacha, right? This is a machlokas. It's not about halacha. It's just a historical machlokas. Either it's here or it's there. I don't know where it is. Okay, we don't have the tools to do underground scanning, so we don't know. But this isn't the halachic machlokas. What do you mean you're posking on a historical question? How do you posking on a historical question? You have a halachic question. What should a Jew do in this situation? So I'll tell you what the halachic is. If you have machlokas at Tanan, you got a posking. But how do you posking a historical question? This is a halachic work. What's going on? So we have two difficult rambles about the Arab. The first one, he said too little. The second one, he said too much. In the first one, he was describing the midst of the building of Beis HaMikdash. He didn't even mention the need to have an Aron as part of this thing. In the second Rambam, he said too much. There's an open historical question. Where was the Aron put? And the Rambam treats it as though it's a halachic question, needs a psak. And his psak is, the Aron is in the basement. What psak? Either it's here or it's there. Wherever it is, that's where it is. It's not a present halachic question. So the Rav and Rav Yaakov Emden both suggest that apparently the Rambam thought it is a halachic question. What's the halachic question? Either the Aron was put here over 2,000 years ago, or it was put there. Either it was put in the basement, or it was taken by marauding soldiers. No. The Rav and Rav Yaakov Emden both suggest it is halachic.
Why does it matter where the Aron is? Why? What do you mean that the Ram is poskening that the Aron is in the basement? Well, we were wondering before, what's the point of the Malach to switch from Beis HaMikdash to a person? What's the point of a Malach teaching me Torah pre-birth, only to have it all yanked away, all the knowledge is gone by the moment I'm born? So what was accomplished by that? And one last question. We all learned Maseches Megillah this summer. The Gemara Megillah is also, even if you haven't seen it, you've definitely heard of it before. It's on the top of the last page. The Gemara says there are items after what we call Sheamus, and things that don't go into Sheamus. The Gemara calls it Geniza. The Gemara says there are some items used for a mitzvah that have to go into Geniza. That when you're done, you've got to bury them. And there are others used for a mitzvah, but when you're done, you just put in the garbage, politely, respectfully, but put in the garbage. Take a look. Here, Megillah Chavava Beis, beginning the last parrot. Tarabana, the Brisa. Tashmishe mitzvah nizrakin. Tashmishe kedusha niknaz. Items used for a mitzvah, when they're done, you put them in the garbage. Respectfully, but nizrakin. You don't put them in the dirty kitchen garbage with a chicken bone. You wrap them in a bag and put them in the garbage. If they're merely tashmishe mitzvah, bury them nignas, you gotta put them into Sheamus. What's used for a mitzvah and what's holy? The price gives me a list. Think about them in these two ways. The Elu A Fresh Mitzvah. Here, the bottom items are just used for a mitzvah. Sukkah, Lula, Shofar, Tzitzis. When Sukkah is over, you can take your Adasim, wrap them in a bag, put them in the garbage. If your Tzitzis tear and they're unusable, they do not go into Sheamus, wrap them in a bag and put them in the garbage. What are things that have permanent kedusha? Oh, say for Torah, tefillin, and mezuzah. The ritzuas of your tefillin. If your ritzuas snap, you had a mezuzah in a case, and the case cracks, that goes into Sheamus. What's the difference? There's a mitzvah of tefillin, and there's a mitzvah of tzitzis. There's a mitzvah of mezuzah, and there's a mitzvah of sukkah. So why is that? A mitzvah is holy temporarily. The tzitzis, the sukkah, while you're using it, is holy. But once the mitzvah is done, the item has no permanent kedusha. You still have to be respectful, but it doesn't have to go into Sheamus. But if an item was connected to Torah, to Shem Hashem, or to Torah in general, that gives it a permanent kedusha that survives even after the mitzvah is done. The ritzuah snaps on your tefillin, it's not used for the mitzvah anymore, but still, has permanent kedusha connected to Torah. The Rambam needed to paskin that the Aron is in the basement, because that's not just a historical question, it's a question about what is the source of the kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash. And the Rambam paskins that the Aron is in the basement, that means that the source of the kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash was the Aron, the Torah, the Luchos, that even though they were no longer the ground level, were still on campus in the basement. On the other hand, the Rambam did not mention the Aron as one of the pieces of furniture built for the Mikdash, because it's much more central than just one of the pieces of furniture. It's the root
of the whole Kedusha. It's a necessary prerequisite. A Heksher, you want to build a Beis HaMikdash, first that area has to be holy. The way you make that area holy is
by infusing it with Torah, specifically Luchos.
A Jew is holy. Why is every Jew holy? Some Jews learn a lot of Torah, some Jews learn a little Torah. Some Jews might look like they learn no Torah at all. But every Jew emerges into this world holy. Because every Jew comes into this world already having experienced Torah. There's a line they attribute to Albert Einstein. And with this we close. There's a line they attribute to Albert Einstein that education is what remains when information learned has been forgotten. Education is what remains when the information you learned has been forgotten. I went to class, I learned stuff, I may not remember all the facts, but it's hopefully, maybe, it actually changed. I became an educated person. I forgot the detail, but it changed who I am. That's certainly true for Torah. I experience Talmud Torah, it changes who I am, it infuses me with Kedusha. Even if I forget the data, which I'm going to try to remember, but the experience of rubbing shoulders with Torah makes me an elevated person. Makes me a person who's more connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Every Jew emerges into this world already preset, pre-filled with the Kedusha of having rubbed shoulders with the Torah. I do not, the Gemara Nita is telling me, I do not emerge into this world with Torah knowledge in my head. But I do emerge into this world already having experienced, rubbed shoulders with Kol Torah Kula, and already filled with the Kedusha of that experience, which I can build upon and build upon and build upon when I actually learn Torah as a sentient person, as a teenager, as an adult. I'm going to build upon the Torah that was already inborn from that experience of the Malach. I don't remember what he told me, but it shaped my neshama. Every Jew is like that at every time in history. Imagine if we could go to a place that was infused with the Kedusha of Torah in the most intense way. That's what the Beis HaMikdash was and is. The Makom HaMikdash is a place where the place itself is infused with the Kedusha of Luchos, with the Kedusha of Aron. Imagine if we could crisscross our own personal Kedusha with the Kedusha of space. Imagine how much easier it would be to activate our own Kedusha. Imagine how much easier it would be to grow into the sort of people we want to be. That's what we're missing all year long. It's over these 3 weeks that we have an easier time noticing the Kedusha that we do have, the potential that we do have, how much more is missing because we don't have a Mikdash, and how much we yearn for things to be naturally in the holy way that they ought to be. Have an awesome, productive Shavuot Shalom.